Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, good evening and welcome to the Talking Cop. We're here for another full-time match reaction. It's finished at Anfield. Liverpool 1, Manchester City 1, the PGMOL 2. I am your host, Matt. I'm joined tonight by my usual compadre, Kev O'Sullivan, and back for the first time in a while, Luke, my man. Luke, good to see you. How did you enjoy the match?
I was a nervous wreck at the start, and then at the end, I was apoplectic with rage. That's why my face is so red, because my head's still so hot.
I didn't want to point it out. But
yeah, I'm just as nervous at the beginning, and then towards like the end, I'm just sat there. My dog's cowering in the corner because of upsetting, because I've been that mad that we've just been denied an opportunity to win the game with a stonewall penalty. Stonewaller. I'm just still raging.
Yeah. I mean, Kev GN says here, last time I checked, studs at that level, the level being in the ribs, is dangerous and you better get the ball territory. How you feeling, Mr. O'Sullivan? Feel like you've been given the rub of the green tonight?
I'm very aware that it's 6 o'clock in the evening, so I'm going to be really careful about what I can say. But I'm watching it there. Those studs are right into his chest, and it's not the first time. That last season, Cody Gakpo had one. Do you remember?
Yeah, Aston Villa, John Brooks. Yeah,
studs down his chest. That there is a classic case of the referees absolutely bottling a key decision in a major game again. We've had it already with the Odegaard penalty that wasn't given. We've had the debacle at Spurs, and now this today. Nobody can tell me now that Liverpool is a thing. Getting a fucking binned, a lot of you.
Kev, and what about that drop ball that went against Nottingham Forest, though? That was a monumental error, wasn't it?
Let's see. What monumental error they talk about this, because, I mean, at the end of the day, look, it was a good game. It was end-to-end. It was entertaining. If you're a neutral watching that, it was blood and thunder. We had the better chances. We should have won it without the referee giving blatant penalties. But at the same time, that's just blown me away. That has blown me away. The fact that someone can have a video replay of multiple angles as many times as they want to see that, they come up with a decision that that's a legitimate tackle, or that that's a legitimate way of playing the ball. It's beyond a joke. And by the end of the season, we'll look back, and I'm convinced that whichever way this goes, the referees in this league will decide who wins the league. It's not going to be decided on the pitch. It's referees. It's incompetence like that that decide referees or that decide the league this season. It's a fucking joke.
Yeah, it's not the level that we would expect, especially for the best three-way title race in living memory. I don't know. I can't recall a title race that has felt this fraught with tension of three teams that are right on each other's necks game after game after game. I believe it's, what, 65, 64, 63 points now. So Arsenal at 65 in first place. Yeah, 64, Liverpool
64, because we're top. We're joint on goal difference. Then City's a point under us. So we're all separated by a point.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, Arsenal's ahead on goal difference at 64 points. We're on 64 points, and Man City on 63 points. So, I mean, it's all right there, and it's infuriating. I mean, Kev, you mentioned the foul last season of Konsa on Cody Gakpo, and Ashley L says the ref committee came out after that Cody Gakpo challenge and admitted they were wrong, and it should have been a red card. But even though that challenge wasn't a red card, I believe I do have my notebooks here. I could probably go back through and find it. I'm pretty sure that that foul was given as a yellow card. It was definitely given as a foul, which means that if that same level of foul takes place in the penalty area, that should be a fucking penalty. Whew. It feels like we're at risk of running through this show backwards because there's such a humongous talking point at the end of it. So let me circle back around and see if I can get us back on the rails here. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. This is obviously the Talking Cop channel. If you're watching live, please hit the thumbs up button. Let us know that you're watching. Lash all your comments into the chat. I'll try to get through as many of them as possible. But on a day like today, it might be a little bit hot and heavy in there. Obviously, Luke and Kev, thanks for joining me. Please become a member to the channel if you want to catch all of our members-only shows that are going on. Great series we have available for you, as well as Gab just talking the absolute crack it. And in the morning, Luke, lineup dropped an hour before the game for some people in the know, maybe 15, 20 minutes before that. And Ibu Konate doesn't make it. Probably what we all expected, that Ibu wasn't going to make the game. But the big one is that Gomez comes in at left back ahead of Robertson. Bradley and Kwanzaa play on the right side of defense, with Virgil van Dijk obviously being Virgil van Dijk. The midfield three of Szoboszlai, Endo, and McAllister, as to be expected. I really thought that Salah was going to get the start, but instead it's Elliott on the right wing with Darwin in the middle and Diaz on the left-hand side. You saw those lineups, Luke. How were you feeling? Confident? Wavering?
I was feeling as confident as you can be, because I thought it would have been Gomez at centre-half and Robertson at left-back. But the fact is that he trusted Kwanzaa. I was slightly concerned because I just thought Haaland would just pin on in the whole game, sort of just be following him around. But actually, Haaland spent most of the time with Virgil, and which I found quite odd, because I thought Haaland would have just stuck himself to Kwanzaa and really give him a tough time. But yeah, I thought the lineup was pretty much as strong as you could have gone, considering the injuries. I did find it surprising that Salah didn't start, but I think they're just trying to manage his minutes. Really, because you don't want to start him and then begin to break down, and then we're all going, oh, why did you start Salah if he wasn't fully fit, sort of thing. So, yeah, the lineup was probably the strongest you could have gone, really.
Yeah, and what about you, Mr. O'Sullivan? You feel that's the best we could have put out, or would you like to have seen Robertson from the start, maybe Gomez at center half, maybe Gomez at right back?
No, I would have preferred to see Robertson at right back. At left back. Other than that, I understand why he didn't. You know, at the end of the day, Robertson hasn't been great recently either. So Joe's been fine at left back. Had his moments today, but look, you're playing against a side or the champions who's literally won everything last year, more or less. And Phil Foden is banging form, so he's going to make you look like a bit of an idiot at times.
Kev, is the sniper. I don't know if you heard that on your comms, but his teammates have taken to calling him the sniper. I don't want to say that's a fucking douchey nickname, but it's pretty douchey.
It's bad. No, look, that would have been the only thing I would have changed. Other than that, Mo was never going to start. I mean, at the end of the day, Mo was never going to start. That's his second Premier League game this year, and he's coming back not only after a hamstring problem. When they tried to take a gamble on him, it backfired massively. So they're going to really be careful with him. he'll probably get more minutes Thursday night and then see where he is for next weekend. But the rest of it, yeah, boy, picks itself. Good to see Dominic Szoboszlai starting. I don't think you can really much said anything much apart from you're looking at the centre-back and right-hand side. I mean, at the end of the day, Kwanzaa 20, Bradley 19, is it, or 21 and 20, whatever it is, really inexperienced. And against the side with Haaland up front, Alves, De Bruyne, Bernardo Silva, Phil Foden, you know, that's a tough ask for anyone. That's a tough ask if you're starting Konate, Trent, Robertson, Virgil, Alisson and goal. That's a tough ask for anyone. The fact that one of our recognised back five is starting, yeah, that's a worry. You know, no doubt about it. You know, there's no point in saying otherwise. That is a worry.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it really felt like, I don't know if your stream was the same as mine, but just before kickoff, I heard a Spanish-accented voice. I don't know if it was Pep Guardiola. I presumed it was Pep. Might have been Rodri. Might have been Silva. Who knows? It was an Iberian accent saying, we came here to win today. They didn't come to win today. But from the lineup, which effectively was playing 5-0-5, like Rodri was dropping back in to help the defense. I've watched an embarrassing amount of Manchester City this season, and I have never seen Rodri play as deep as he played today. I don't know if he got into our box more than a handful of times, like a single handful of times, whereas he's normally popping up on the edge of the 18-yard box, putting away late winners for Manchester City so that their dozens of fans can celebrate with it. But this was full defense and full attack, and they bypassed the midfield, and we completely bypassed the midfield. I mean, Luke, it was a worry coming into the game because we know that historically City's strength lies in the midfield. You know, whether it was Fernandinho or Rodri, KDB has been an ever-present for almost a decade now, that they overload the midfield with players. You get people like Foden and Silva that are ostensibly playing as wingers dropping into the midfield to make it 5v4 or 5v3, and they overload the numbers. But it was a bit like, let's just ignore the midfield from both teams, wasn't it? Or maybe that's just me.
Yeah, I think for Liverpool, like every time Kelleher got the ball, it was immediately pumped long to Nunes. So I think we're definitely trying to bypass the midfield. I thought we definitely got stuck in the midfield battle. I wouldn't say City really dominated. I thought we held our own. I thought Alexis McAllister in that game was superb. Was absolutely superb. But yeah, I think in the first half we were definitely bypassing our their midfield, and I think it says it all when Pep hooks Kevin De Bruyne second half. That sort of shows to me Pep's going, I'm taking the point and I'm getting out of here. And obviously De Bruyne was not happy with the fact that he got taken off.
Yeah, I don't know if Boom Boom 43 is your burner, Luke, but he says they say the exact same thing. Brought Kovacic on for De Bruyne, so they were happy to take the draw. I wrote in my notes when they took De Bruyne off that they're not scoring again. That was it. It was going to end 1-1, or we were going to go on and win that game. And it's very disappointing. But Kev, they dominated us the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, I mean... There was method to the madness with us going long. It was looking for the knock-ons. For the first really 10, 15 minutes, Luis Diaz was really close to Darwin, looking for those flick-ons. Darwin kept catching himself offside, which was, you know, more City pushing right up on the halfway line. Darwin not timing his runs. But the other side of it is the amount of times we got the ball up to, and they won the first header, but we won the next ball. It was almost as if our midfield was saying, okay, if the ball comes up to Akanji, he's going to look to head it to one of these two spaces, flood those spaces. So you're winning, you have a chance to win the knock-on. If not, you're going to win the second ball. And we did that really well for large parts of the game. But the opening 10 minutes, yeah, they kept the ball well. They moved us around. So in the main, we did okay. We managed it fine. It was... I always felt that that's how the game was going to start. That not that we'd stand off them, but you can very easily find yourself on the end of one or two quick goals if you go gung-ho. You have to manage the game in sections, more or less. And the first 10, 15 minutes was basically stay in it and make sure you don't do anything stupid. Try to work your chances, but make sure you don't concede. Make just that, and that's the job, you know, for the first 10, 15 minutes. And you still have to try and work out how they're going to play, because they tend to change to when they play us. They don't tend to do what they do against most other sides. And that was telling, like you said, Rodri dropping deeper to make the extra man, to give the extra pass out for Ederson when he was on the pitch. But all in all, it was not much happening. It was pretty, you know, it was tense. It was like you're almost waiting for something to bubble over or something to break for you. A few half chances, but nothing massively until the corner.
Yeah. Yeah. Hold on. You mentioned tension. Ashley L says here, responding to Yuse, who's another one of our YouTube members. She says, midway through the game, my watch says, "It looks like you're working out. Would you like to record a workout?" Ashley, I got the exact same alert from my phone, like 30 seconds after kickoff, where it's like, "You have a heart rate of 115 beats per minute. Is everything okay?" Like, no, everything's not okay, fucking watch, all right? I'm going to be beating Man City by 9-0. But we get through the first, like, they showed the graph at halftime of the attacking threat, and it was very clear that in the first 10, 15 minutes, it was all Man City, and then it was all Liverpool, and then a huge blip when they score their opening goal, and then it's all Liverpool for the rest of the game. And I think the first real chance of the game, Luke, comes in the 13th minute. Connor Bradley does so well down the right touchline. He absolutely skins Nathan Ake, whips across into the box. It's too far ahead of Darwin Nunez, who goes sliding for it like the madman that we all know that he is. He doesn't quite Phil Babb himself, but he definitely makes contact with the post. But to me, the openings were there. Like, City's back line, they start with a back line of Walker, Akanji, Stones, and Ake. Ruben, the sandwich, yeah. Diaz stays on the bench for the entire game. Pep Guardiola, as usual, doesn't make pretty much any substitutions. He doesn't believe in five substitutions, but it felt like we could get at them in and around the back, and that was a good chance for Bradley. We didn't quite take it, but at that point, it was a turning point where we started to come into the game a bit.
Yeah, definitely. I felt in that Bradley chance, I thought he should have taken a shot at goal rather than putting it across to make the keeper make a save to see where he would have parried it to. I think the most frustrating thing for me when we were creating chances was just being offside. Like, couldn't hold runs when Nunez had his opportunity where Diaz tapped it in, miles offside. So I think we had opportunities until that final pass and someone just wanders offside and you're sitting there going, can someone just stay onside? Because we're getting in here. It's like they were trying to compensate with City's pace at the back to try and make the run a bit earlier when we didn't really need to do that. Like, Nunez did not need to be offside like 4 or 5 times in the first half. Like, he was just drifting offside.
He's a virile stallion, Luke. He just wants to get out into the stud farm and just do his thing. That is Darwin Nunez. That is the Darwin Nunez that we know. I mean, it's disappointing because I pegged this game, as I have every game for the last about 3.5 months, as the game for Darwin Nunez to really step up and make himself known. And he didn't have the best game. He gets subbed off late in the first half. I mean, Kev, let's come on to their goal. It's a great free kick, our corner routine from them. My comms was mentioning the name of the guy that does City's set piece coaching. I don't give a fuck who he is. That's poor from Liverpool, though. Whether it's Alexis McAllister getting pinned by Nathan Ake at the front post or Darwin Nunez absolutely being ghosted by his man, who is the eventual goal scorer, John Stones. Yeah. You can't be. That's bad.
It is. There's no way of dressing it up. I mean, at the end of the day, they do their jobs better than we do ours. You should never be beaten with a corner like that. That's just piss poor every which way you look at it. Darwin falls asleep. Let Stones have a run. The key to it all was Ake blocking off McAllister. That made the space. Once he got into the space, you know, the days are gone of having a man on each post. And if anything, you're never going to have a man on the near post anyway. You'll always have him on the far post. So, you know, once Stones gets into the position, you know the ball coming in is going to be quality because of who's playing it. So all he's got to do is get any kind of good contact on the ball and it's going in. But yeah, it's more poor from us than it is. I mean, it was good execution from them, but it's woeful. The fact that they get a point out of this game on the strength of that is really fucking poor. And I think that was their first corner as well. So it's clear as day, we were not expecting that. You'd expect a lot of things. You might expect them to go short. You might expect them to go to the edge of the box or to crowd the keeper.
Yeah.
Nobody picked that they're going to drill one low into the near post and look for a runner to nick it in. Nobody. So it was their
second corner of the game. The first corner of the game came to absolutely nothing. Yeah. It was in the eighth minute. No, that's okay. This is why I take studious notes, Kev. I mean, Luke Sukhbir Sekhon says, how's that not blocking off on McAllister? And it might be grasping at straws, but I believe we had a fairly legitimate goal in the League Cup final chalked off for interfering with play from an offside position, which it can't be offside if it's not interfering. And if it's interfering,
McAllister was dragging Ake to him. I think McAllister was dragging him towards him, leaving the space for Stones to nip across. So I think it's McAllister that's dragging Ake to him, leaving the space for Stones to tuck it in.
Every which way you look at it, he's not offside. Endo was coming from an offside position, and once he interferes with the play in any way, shape, or form, he's offside.
Yeah,
that's just the way it is. You can say that now because we've got the cup in the bag. If it was the other way around, I'd be looking at it differently. but there was nothing wrong. There was no foul in that goal. There was no foul in that goal.
I think that goal is very well worked by City. Like, if you can't use a blocking player from a set piece like they used Ake to block off McAllister, then I don't know, fold the game up and let's all go home, because that's the point of set pieces. You're supposed to be able to do that, and we need to be smarter with it. So whoever's in charge of our set pieces is going to be fuming when it comes down time for, like, tomorrow when they come into the AXA to do video review of the day. You know, nobody's out running. They're looking at the video of the post-match. There's going to be some coaches that are going like, what were you doing at that moment? But for full respect, I mean, Luke, Anfield absolutely roared in response to that goal. You know, we went down, and we've seen already this season, I mean, we're at our 28th league game of the year. I think it's our about 44th, 45th game of the season. We've seen times where Liverpool have gone behind early or early-ish in games, and the crowd has been muted, and Klopp has needed to whip the crowd up behind him. Not today. I mean, the crowd was on it from 20, 30, 60 minutes before the game. Even after they score, Anfield is still there for us. And from there until the break, I felt that we were the better team.
Yeah, I thought the crowd was excellent. I think you don't really hear City until they score. I think towards the end, I think is where you hear the City fans. But apart from that, I thought Anfield was superb, because there has been criticisms from Klopp this season that the atmosphere hasn't been quite up to standards. But I think today just showed that. For the big game, that we got up for the big game, but we now need to see this for when we play Brighton or when we play Slavia Prague on Thursday. So that needs to be like the standard now, for the rest of the season with regards to the atmosphere.
Yeah. I mean, Kev, coming through to the end of the first half, I think something that was pretty much constant throughout the game, and we mentioned it in the aftermath of the Thursday night post-match after Sparta Prague. Virgil van Dijk is one hell of a fucking center half, isn't he, Kev? He was everywhere he needed to be, pretty much every time he needed to be. And I don't know if Erling Haaland had a touch of the football before the 32nd minute.
He was imperious today. You could almost tell he took it personally, the slights against him last season. Mm. And he definitely kept receipts. So when you get a game like today, I mean, there was a couple of chances towards in the Dom Szoboszlai had a really good header that he should have done better with. Cross from Bradley that he just got, he just didn't get over it to get it down. But you could see that that's how we were trying to work chances. Cut the ball back in front of the penalty box. Don't try to go, there's no point in trying to go around the back of City because Ederson is really good at coming from off his line. But if you cut it back to the penalty spot or cut it back from the penalty spot to the edge of the area, you're giving yourself a really good chance. There was a one-on-one that Virgil had with Haaland. And that, to me, was experience. Age and experience and wisdom.
He just shows him.
Yeah. He's like, I know you want to go onto the left. I'm going to put you onto your left. And I trust my keeper.
Yeah.
But I also trust that you can't get a shot off at full pace.
Yeah. He shows him onto his left in such a way that it's telegraphed to Kevin Kelleher that he's going to show him onto his left. And the only choice that Haaland's going to have is to try to pull it back across the goal to Kelleher's low left-hand side. And it makes it so easy. Like, I thought he was so good tonight because like when we went through the lineups, I mentioned that our right hand side of center half, like we were missing four out of our five first choice 11 defenders. When you include the goalkeeper, we've got our reserve goalkeeper in. Our first and second choice partners to Virgil van Dijk are not available, which is Joel Matip and Ibu Konate. And both of our first choice fullbacks are out. That's a pretty underwhelming for most teams starting defensive five with the goalkeeper in it. And Virgil van Dijk, he could not be any more deserving of the captain's armband. 41st minute, Luke, Luis Diaz has a shot that goes wide. I mean, we have a counterattack. Luis Diaz beats Kyle Walker. Rodri gets beaten by Luis Diaz. Walker gets beaten again. Like, Luis Diaz seemed like a man possessed tonight, Luke. I don't know if that's just my reading of the game, but he was not getting beaten in a 1v1 against anybody on that pitch.
He was brilliant until it came to pulling the trigger. I think he was superb with the dribbling, you know, around Walker, Rodri, getting into the great positions. But when it came to pulling the trigger, I thought that let him down because he should have had a hat trick today with the chances he had today. But yeah, I thought his all round game up until then was brilliant. He was like a Duracell bunny. I thought he was going to get subbed. I thought he was going to be coming off for Gakpo instead of Nunes. But yeah, he was immense until it came to pulling the trigger. For me, I just really hope that the misses, we're not going to look back and go, we didn't win the league because someone forgot the shooting boots. But yeah, apart from that, I thought he was superb. I thought he was definitely, I'd say he was definitely our best attacker today. Even though Darwin won the penalty, I thought Diaz was the best attacker today for us.
Yeah, he was infinitely dangerous in today's game, and whether we win the title or come up fucking absolutely painfully short or not, I don't think this is the game that we're going to look back on and be like, ah, that's where we threw it away. You know, like you can look at Luton away. There's plenty of other opportunities where we've dropped points that were there to take. Taking a point against Man City, and this is full respect on Manchester City. Like, let me say this 115 times. They are a very good football team. Whether they have financially doped and cheated their way to being here, which they definitely have, they are regardless, but they have cheated. They're a fantastic football team. So to take 2 points against them, two draws in the city, home and away draws against Man City, is not a bad thing for us to take away from it. Kev, I have to say the biggest shocker from the first half was the second minute of injury time in the first half when I didn't know that the refs were allowed to give yellow cards to Rodri.
Yeah, I was surprised.
I was stunned he actually got the yellow.
You should have had one earlier, but
that's impossible. You got that one. That's impossible.
Look, it was a booking, but they had one really good chance where they should have made it 2-0, right on the stroke of halftime. Walker burst through down the wing, and he overhit. Haaland did the right thing, pulled the two centre-backs to him, and all Walker had to do was get the cross right, and De Bruyne was coming in on the far post, and it would have been a simple tap-in. But he overhit it. But then you hit halftime and you're thinking, okay, we're well in this. You know, can't afford to go 2 down. Can't afford any more mistakes, any more gimmies. But I honestly felt we were well in it. From the time they scored, we were creating enough opportunities to get at them. And you could tell that they were not in the have what we hold mode. But there was definitely a case for them to take less risks the longer the half went on, because we just grew into it and got better and better. And bar that one counter that they had at the end of the half, I was like, okay, let Klopp do his thing at halftime. They'll spot where the spaces are. He'll get into the likes of Kwanzaa and Bradley to be braver when they're on the ball and see what the second half brings. The key to the second half was starting strong. You know, we had to start the second half strong. We couldn't be sheepish and the grow into it malarkey again. We had to start the second half strong, and we did. You know, 2 minutes in, Darwin chases a nothing back pass, you know, a lost cause again. And he led it the press in the first half every single time. Charge the keeper down every single time, and you charge the keeper down every single time for that one time when they underhit a pass and you force a mistake, and he gets there before Ederson, and Ederson does his, I think it looked like to me that he'd done his thigh when he tried to hack Darwin out of it. It was a stonewall penalty, and that was on 47 minutes, and Alexis McAllister had 3 minutes then to wait while the physios came on, VAR check, and that had to be playing on his head. You know, that's a long time to wait. And, you know,
he did this though on Thursday though, Kev.
Yeah.
Alexis McAllister does not mind a long build up to his penalty.
Yeah, but it's a thing with football where I don't blame Ederson one bit. I text Chris during the game. I said, I'm amazed that the physios aren't on the pitch. Because he can't be told to go to the side for 30 seconds. That, you know, even if there was absolutely nothing wrong with him, force McAllister to wait that little bit longer. It's a huge game. This is the biggest game on television in the world today. The world's eyes are on this. So make him wait. And he did. Make a blind bit of fucking difference, mind you. But it was, I mean, a penalty where he could do absolutely nothing about it. The height, he went the right way. The height took it away from him. And it was a brilliant penalty. And to be fair, you have to look at it and say, I don't care if Salah's on the pitch or anyone else is on the pitch. McAllister has an impeccable record when it comes to penalties, and calmness and coolness to just keep his head in that moment, given the importance of that game and the importance of that goal. We had to score that. If we didn't score that, the heads would have dropped, the shoulders would have dropped, the crowd would have dropped, no doubt in my mind, because, and that would have given City all the hope that they needed. But we get it back to 1-1, and it's game on. It truly is game on from there.
Yeah, it's, I mean, the turnaround from halftime, it was never a halftime where you thought, the only outside shout was, does Mo Salah come on at halftime? Because honestly, like, Luke, I thought he'd start. I thought with the minutes that he got against Prague on Thursday, it was a prelude to Mo Salah getting the starting berth on the weekend in the biggest Premier League game of the year, maybe the biggest Premier League game of Jurgen Klopp's career with Liverpool. Mm-hmm. He didn't come on, and we go on to get the penalty immediately afterwards. And I mean, you talk about an absolutely massive piece of work, like, the job that is done by Liverpool winning that penalty and converting that penalty can only be compared to the work that's being done by the people at Fan Supporting Food Banks and the Lighthouse Cafe in Dublin, which are our charity partners for this year. And we'd highly recommend, if you're watching the show or catching up afterwards, to please check out the GoFundMe link in the description for the show on YouTube or on whatever podcasting app that you're catching us up on. Please give us a little bit of money to help support these two fantastic organizations. If you watched any of the coach greetings before the match, you probably would have seen Fan Supporting Food Banks banners hanging outside of Anfield as the two coaches came up and were greeted by hundreds or thousands of absolutely virile Reds greeting the two coaches. But Fan Supporting Food Banks is doing fantastic work for people that are struggling to find meals in Liverpool. The Dublin Lighthouse Cafe is doing the exact same thing. Please help support these two organizations. Become a member of the channel if you can, please and thank you. Support Phil Casey's 5 for 5K quest marathon that he's going on. But, I mean, Luke, what a way to start the second half. I mean, Alexis McAllister, very much similar to the penalty that he ends up winning against Sparta Prague on Thursday, is switched on. He realizes that the ball's there to be won. He gets in to be won. I mean, it's Darwin Nunez in this case. Obviously, I'm a bit of an idiot in that sense, but that's what we needed to start the second half, because you get into halftime at 0-1 to Man City, and the watchword is next goal is everything. Next goal is everything. If they go 2-0, we're in some fucking trouble. If it goes 1-1, well, hello, hello. You know, lovely cushion header by Meller. Well done, Liverpool. Well done, Liverpool. We deserve it.
I thought when we got that penalty, I was like, I just need to see Alexis McAllister having that ball under his arm and not Darwin. I thought Darwin was going to be like, nope, I'm taking this. But I was glad to see Alexis McAllister take the ball for the penalty, because it showed like where his penalties go, and they mostly go to, is it to the keeper's right? And Ederson went the same way. I thought, oh no, I thought he's going to save it, but it nestled in, and that's exactly what the doctor ordered for half time. Get the first goal back as quick as possible, because if that would have dragged out, City probably would have gotten comfortable thinking, yeah, Liverpool aren't really going to score, and they could have dragged it out and slowed down the game, because City towards the end, they completely slowed the game down.
Oh no, they started in the first half as well too, Luke. Let's not forget that. Yeah. City were fucking time-wasting from about the 12th minute onwards.
Yeah, Pep always said, I'll take a point, boys, and let's get out.
I would have sworn that they said before the game they came to win, but they certainly didn't play like a team that came to win. It felt like they... Maybe it's just my red-tinted glasses, which are a very deep shade of red, but he can't handle it, Luke. Like, it's just my thinking of it, is that Pep Guardiola cannot handle Anfield. He can't do it.
Yeah, yeah. I think we saw with his substitutions, like, obviously him not playing Ruben Diaz. For him having Diaz on the bench, him taking off De Bruyne, that's basically him admitting defeat. that, hey, I'm going to leave here with a point because I don't really trust the midfield to sort of keep Liverpool out for the whole game. And you know what? Liverpool were lucky not to gift City a goal with Kelleher doing his best Superman impression and Phil Foden, for it coming off his hand to hit the bar. I thought, oh no, we're going to gift City the win. But yeah, I thought, Pep's never won. Yeah, oh, Austin's right. He's never won in front of a full crowd. Says it all, really. He's probably so glad that he doesn't have to go back there under Klopp.
Absolutely. Kev, you know I'm a stickler for keeping to the timeline, but Ashley Ellis put in a post-match Klopp comment here.
Yeah.
Hey, I
Klopp
need to
says Klopp's press. He can press only it. Hit the ball because his foot is right there. Yeah, they say hit the ball. But if the ball is not there, he kills him. So the foot has nothing to do with it. And I mean, it gets back to what we were talking about. Prakar Singh is in with a super chat immediately following for 200 of whatever currency that is. Since I cannot donate directly to the charity due to geographical constraints. So thank you very much, Prakar Singh. We have ticked you off of the list. I don't know what that converts to, but I mean, that's still absolutely fantastic. The second half was ours to be had. And I mean, Kev, in the penalty buildup, Ederson, the neck tattooed disaster that plays between the posts for Manchester City, seems to have injured himself. And that can't bode well for Manchester City. Because can you imagine, Kev, if you lost your first choice goalkeeper in a tight three-way title race? Can you imagine that? Can you imagine had to put in your backup goalkeeper?
They weren't losing for long. It looked like a thigh strain. The international break is coming at a perfect time. He'll be grand. Ortega's a decent keeper. Don't mix it up. He's a decent keeper. He's pretty good with his feet as well. They targeted him for a reason. He's played a fair bit as well for City this season when they wanted to rest Ederson. So he's not coming into it raw. But we had a great chance. As soon as Salah comes on and he puts the vision to play the pass is one thing. The ability to play the pass is quite something else. Diaz doesn't have to hit the side netting. All he has to do is hit the target. The keeper made his mind up for him because he went down early. All he's got to do is slow himself down. And he didn't. He was going at full pelt. You have to take those chances because they don't come around that often. It was the best chance of the game. And he just tried. I don't know why he was trying to hit the side netting with it. It's crazy. I thought Luis Diaz had a really good game. I thought I think on about the 80th minute, where he had Walker and Rodri hanging out of his backside and running like 70 yards on the pitch, and he still comes out with a ball. It's ridiculous. It was just his end product today letting down. And, you know, it's goals to win games, unfortunately. And that's what you're judged on. You're coming in, you're replacing Sadio Mane. It's goals that win games. And he had a great chance. That was a great chance. And a minute later, he had another chance. You know, we were right on it at this stage, completely dominating the game. You know, City were on the ropes at this stage. And you have, you know, Luke, 64 minutes, chance for Diaz. Liverpool utterly dominant. Diaz sprung another golden chance. Nunes pulls right to find the Colombian with a cute ball into the box. But he gets his touch all wrong. The thing is with that one, I don't know if you remember it, he was ahead of the ball.
Yeah.
He was ahead of the ball. He had to take the touch. It allowed Walker to get back to him and nick it. If he wasn't ahead of the ball, he takes that first time.
Yeah.
It's the tiny margins. Do you know what I mean? That's all it is. It's the tiny margins.
I know. It's just those little margins. Just those little margins may or may not cost us down the line. Because I thought he could have had a hat trick today with the chances he had. Obviously, he had a goal ruled out because Nunes was offside, but he was great until that final touch, the final pass, the final shot.
Shit happens. Another day, he is an absolute stinker and he gets a brace.
That's very true.
From the resulting corner, Salah has a double chance.
Oh.
One with the left foot and the volley with the right. They either stick or twist. You know, he goes with the one with his right foot. If he hits that one with his right foot, with the outside of his right foot, it curls in. That's what I'm talking about. It's the fine margins. I wouldn't say, I mean, the Diaz chance was the best chance of the game. Everything else was half chance that you hope it goes for you. You know, because at this stage, from about the time when Salah came on, for that 10-minute period, we were completely and totally, utterly dominant. You know, and that's when you got to make your chances count.
You talk about making your chances count, Kev. That was the entirety of the second half to me, because even coming out from the halftime break, it felt like we were always going to be on top. And from the 68th minute, when they made their changes and took KDB off for Kovacic, I wrote in my notes, they're not going to score again. He's the key to them scoring.
So he basically admits defeat, like he can't take three, but it'll take a point.
Yeah, which is so strange, because I heard as clear as day before kickoff that they said, we are here to win today. We are here to win today. And they didn't. As soon as it came back to 1-1, they clearly were happy with the point, which you can't blame them for. Man City have been down in distance time and time again in a title race. They know how to do this final stretch of the season. That when you've hit the fucking wall and you don't think you've got it in you anymore and you have to go again and again and again, Man City have been there and done that. So they're always going back themselves, and I can't blame them for that. But it was, you saw the reaction, Kev, of Kevin De Bruyne when he got taken off. He was furious, to copy Luke, apoplectic. Interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think he knows the reason, and he knows the type of changes that were being made. That was the stage that that City got into the what we have, we hold. Bearing in mind, Rodri was on a booking, and Bernardo Silva was ineffective. Foden is in brilliant form at the minute, so he was never going to come off.
Sniper, yeah.
Yeah, he was never going to come off. But at the end of the day, you can have a striker like Haaland all you like. You have to give him service. And there's nobody going to give him better service than Kevin De Bruyne. I was delighted to see the back of him. And I think he's a fantastic footballer. I think he's brilliant. One of the few world-class players that are in the Premier League. He's out there, head and shoulders, better than anyone else. And when Pep took him off, delighted with life. Absolutely delighted with life. I'm glad he had the hump as well. Because at the end of the day, I'd expect nothing. I'd expect the same if Salah was coming off. If Salah had started and, you know, he was in flying form and he was being hooked on 70 minutes in a game that you're drawing that you needed to get a result in and you had a chance of winning it and Salah was hooked, I'd expect Salah to be given daggers, Jurgen Klopp, like he's done in the past. You expect that from top players.
Yeah.
I was delighted to see the back of him. Make no mistake about it. And when the changes came in, I was like, they're bringing Doku on. Okay, he's as predictable as the day is long. You know exactly what he's going to do.
He won it for them as well.
Yeah, but he's capable of that. But in the main, he's like, he'll chop back onto his right foot and he'll look to try to play work 1-2s around the fullback. That's his game. He's really good at it when you allow him to do it. But, you know, yeah, he hit the one shot, it hit the post, came back to the keeper. But other than that, That was it.
Yeah. I mean, Thor, the dyslexic polyglot, and this is as good a time as any, Luke. He says,
a word
on Endo, lads. I mean, Luke, for a 17 million pound, 30-year-plus-old transfer from a team that barely escaped relegation from the Bundesliga last year. What a player we have gotten. And I've been saying it to Kev for the last 6, 7, 10 post-match shows. The partnership that Wataru Endo and Alexis McAllister have struck up in our midfield is outrageously good, but he was so good again today, wasn't he?
Yeah, I thought he was absolutely magnificent. Him and McAllister were in the midfield, and I've had to eat a bit of humble pie because when he signed that, when Fabrizio tweeted, I was on the way home from work, and I was like, who the bleep is this guy that we've just bought in, or who we're going to buy in? But obviously, he had a very, very slow start, and you know, people saying, he's not very good. And obviously had that Palace game when he got hooked and people thought, yeah, that's him done. But that Arsenal game at Anfield, he basically arrived. And since then, he's been pretty much flawless. And we have missed him when he's not been in the team. When McAllister's had to drop back in the six when he was at the Asian Cup, we missed him massively.
Which is saying something, isn't it, Luke? Because when McAllister was the number six at the start of the season, we were like, this is a solid number six. But then Endo got that job and it's like, oh no, this is a number six.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought defensively he was everywhere. I thought he was very tidy on the ball, got stuck in. And like, could you imagine, like, if you're a City player, just seeing him in the tunnel and even smiling with that gum shield on, ready, knowing that he's going to go through you to get the ball. That must be pretty intimidating when he's just smiling with the gum shield, ready to go to the battle. Yeah, I thought he was excellent. He was absolutely excellent. And a snip at 16 million. We've seen other midfielders go for 100 plus.
117 million. It's basically Moises Caicedo was, for intents and purposes, £100 million more.
Yeah.
Which you can buy a lot of groceries for £100 million. And I don't even know if Moises Caicedo could be charged with carrying those groceries right there. I mean, Kev, Brian O'Halloran says we were missing six first team players today. We did very well, all things considered. Before the match, they said that we had made seven changes to our starting 11 from the reverse fixture. Only four players that started away at City in the league started today. All things considered. Look, because I'm not, like, before I let you go, Kev, I was not of the camp of a draw is a good result. I was not. And I'll put my cards on the table right now. We have to win this fucking game, because if we don't win this game, it's not in our hands anymore. The league is now ostensibly in Arsenal's hands. If Arsenal win out, they win the league. We can't get 96 points anymore. Our maximum is 94. Arsenal's is, I believe, 94 as well, but they have an incredible goal difference on us. I felt we needed to win this game. A loss would have been, I don't even want to contemplate how down I would have been had we lost this match. A draw is good because it keeps us above City, but it doesn't keep us above Arsenal. So I was down about that fact, but bring me back up, Kev. Come on, we've got maybe 15, 20 more of these shows to do.
Yeah, we've got 8 minutes to go. Here's the thing, right?
Getting giddy, by the way. Like, they're already getting giddy.
Yeah, I'm sure they have. I mean, they've got to play City next week. Look, here's the thing. Ultimately, I think it's the games against Spurs that decide the title. All three sides have to play Spurs. I think City play them at home. Is it? Well, Arsenal, you got London, North London derby. That can go anyway. Anything can happen. And we have them at home.
Spurs as well. I think City and Arsenal got the road to Spurs. Spurs were to come up to Anfield. And I'm pretty sure that we've got a little something for them ready. Yeah.
And
for
the other side of it is Arsenal play City next. So both of them can take 3 points. If they draw and we win, we're back top of the league. All games played is square. And it's a straight shootout from here. There's every chance that
next weekend is fucking massive, though, isn't it, Kev? The next Arsenal the next win. Pre-
the next Premier League weekend isn't until after the international break. So, no. Well, we've got the FA Cup next weekend.
Yeah.
And then the break. In the block of four games, three of them were cup games, and today was the only Premier League game. Yeah. So it'll all depend on who comes back healthy after the international break. And the longer that Arsenal and Man City stay in Europe, the better for us.
We just need like an Arsenal-City Champions League semi-final.
It'd be ideal. But the thing is, look, you say it's not in our hands. Oh, yeah, Arsenal beat City. It's Arsenal's to lose.
It's not. Kev, it's not in our hands. Before this game, it was in our hands. Yeah. We win this game, we control our fucking destiny, and it's not anymore. And I don't like it.
Well, we'll see how they handle pressure. We're going to drop more points between now and the end of the season. What do you know
about pressure? To quote Dumb and Dumber.
We'll drop more points between now and the end of the season. Yeah, we'll drop more points between now and the end of the season. So was the piece over there. Let's just be honest about it. We have our best players hopefully coming back at the end after the international break. You should have Trent back, you should have Gravenberch back, you will have Mo Salah back to match fitness.
Yes, he's not going on the international duty.
Yeah, you'll have Curtis Jones back and available, all of whom will have had a break. Salah will, after basically 2 month break from football, that'll help him with the run in. It might be out of our hands. And if Arsenal go and beat City at the Etihad, at their ground, and go unbeaten, hats off, fair play to them. I don't want hats off, fair play to them.
I want a fucking Premier League title, is what I want. I mean, we are.
You just want to go on the beer.
I want to go on the fucking beers. I got two bottles of champagne in the fridge that I'm not allowed to open because we didn't win this fucking game. We should be sitting here celebrating a 2-1 footballing miracle fucking victory and me drinking a bottle of champagne. Luke, before we get out of here, I would be absolutely remiss if I did not mention in the 81st minute, Luis Diaz does a run through the middle of Manchester City. Not Everton, not Sheffield United, not Burnley, but through Manchester City's midfield that was out fucking rageous. He wanted to win so badly today, and that's why I'm furious about us not winning this fucking match.
Yeah, I thought he was going to get Rodri sent off. I thought Rodri was going to have to take him out. And then Rodri let him go, and then Walker tried to go in, and then Diaz was like, see you later. One time back to Manchester. And then
somebody sent a message here that says Rodri is 2 yellow cards in the next 4 or 5 matches away from being suspended for accumulation of yellow cards. And please, for the love of God,
you wouldn't miss any games.
Yes, yeah, send him off. No, two in his next two.
No, he's got once they come to 32 games, they're wiped.
Yeah,
so it's 4 games.
Well, actually, I was just raining on my parade with a Jurgen Klopp quote that says, nobody will be opening champagne bottles tonight. There's a long way to go. Obvious not a title decider. Well, clearly Jurgen didn't get all of my postcards I've been sending him, care of the AXA, from me, saying, please, Jurgen, just win all of our games so I can drink champagne on every post-match show and be drunk for the next 2.5 months. Boys, we're going to cut this one.
Ready to break two sets of fans' hearts, Arsenal and City.
Fuck Arsenal's fans, and City doesn't own fans. Arsenal have fans because they're an actual club with an actual history and actual fans, but Manchester City is fucking embarrassing. There was more people at the coach greeting for tonight's game than there was at Manchester City's treble parade because they're not a real club. So we have a show coming up tonight on the channel, the Keg Show, which is Keith, Emmett, Gav, and Shawnee. I've just named it. They don't know I've named it the Keg Show. They're coming up in the next, they're on in about 2 hours. Holy shit, the night flies by quickly. So we're going to cut this short. Luke, who's your man of the match? Is it three? It's daylight savings time, Kev. It's this weird time where we had daylight savings time last night and you guys don't have it for what, a week?
Yeah, we got a week.
Yeah, it's great because the Thursday game is on at 4 p.m., which means I don't have to take a day off work. Luke, who's your man of the match tonight?
Alexis McAllister, but shout out to Kwanzaa as well because he had an excellent game.
Kev, who'd you like?
It's Virgil, isn't it? Look, I thought Alexis was brilliant. And I just because Luke gave it to him, I just go with someone else. The only thing that Kwanzaa, I didn't like, he got caught on a ball a couple of times.
Yeah.
The thing that I really liked about Kwanzaa in the second half, he took the ball out. He did it. He channeled his inner Joel Matip.
Had the shot as well. It was saved.
He just went with it. Yeah, it was a really good save as well. But yeah, look, to a man, everyone played well. Nobody let anyone down. I think Virgil van Dijk was outstanding. Mm-hmm. I just think he was imperious today. Best player on the pitch. McAllister was really, really top tier, though. You know, you can't fault him. The balls to take that pen and definitely robbed of another one at the end. Definitely robbed. Exactly. Madge makes a point there. Grieving Keller, safe pair of hands again. Fuck all about the goal, but in general, his general keeping, his general footwork, outstanding. But it's becoming the norm now. You know, the more he's playing, the better he's getting.
Well, Kev, you mentioned Kelleher there off the back of Madge's comment. Manchester City fans will be clenching BHs, hoping that Ederson is okay. Whereas Liverpool fans are like, it's not great that Alisson is out, but Kwaveen Kelleher is, like Jurgen Klopp said, he's the best number two goalkeeper in the world. And I'm wondering if that was a translation error and he actually was trying to say he's the second best goalkeeper in the world. Because that sounds like something that Jurgen would have said. Because honestly, Kev, I'm obviously being a little bit outrageous for the sake of YouTube. Like, subscribe to the channel, you dumb motherfuckers. He's been Kev, if you would have known in August that Alisson was going to be out for an extended period of time, and somebody asked you, do you think you're going to be in a title challenge? You would have said no.
I don't think any of us would have believed that we were in a title race at the start of the season anyway. But
This over-optimistic idiot did.
No chance. Nah. Kelleher I had no problem with. The only thing that worried me with Kelleher was his first game of the season. The first time he played, I thought he was shaky as you like. He was definitely one that needed minutes. But once
is that a way Alisson, to last?
And Alisson does get injured. So it's like, you know there's going to be a point in the season where he's going to get minutes. So the second that he knew that he was going to be the man, that he was going to be playing, you just saw it's like a mentality switch. Once he knows and he was comfortable that he was going to be playing and he could prepare himself for it, he's been absolutely brilliant. I think he's conceded one goal in his last four, something like that.
Yeah, and it was today.
He's been outstanding. Yeah, he's been outstanding. Yeah. And he could do nothing about the goal. There's nothing. Yeah. He actually got close, which is more than most would.
I'm happy that you both flitted around the edges. To me, I don't think there's a question as to who was man of the match today, because when the lineups dropped and you looked at it and you went, holy shit, if you're Erling Haaland and you're looking at the Liverpool lineup and you're saying, I have to pick out who I'm going to play against between Virgil van Dijk and Jarrell Kwanzaa, you're going to pick Jarrell Kwanzaa and you are going to hammer him for the entire game. And I don't know if Haaland has a touch before the 32nd minute. I think the 32nd minute was his very first touch of the game.
Well, I won't tell you the minutes, but I'll tell you.
I want the minutes, Kev.
I think he had something like 26.
It was fucking embarrassing.
Touches in the game.
He had fewer touches in the entire
21.
Mo Salah had coming on as a substitute in that game.
He had 20. He had 21 touches in total. And
by the way,
if you don't think that is an incredible accomplishment. Who gave him the man of the match?
Liverpool gave Endo Carlsberg man of the match.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue too much with that.
I would give him 10 new mouth guards for that. He deserves everything he wants because Wataru Endo is an absolute legend already of this club. But for today, the situation when the lineups dropped of having Bradley at right back and Kwanzaa at right center half, the fact that Jarrell Kwanzaa, minus one or two moments where he looked a little under pressure. One of those was from a Virgil van Dijk ball that he should have never played to him. Mm. I thought Kwanzaa was just, he's 20 years old, and 12 months ago, you couldn't have picked him out of a fucking lineup. And that is, to me, that's high praise. And maybe that's just me. I got to apologize to Ashley L. We've been over the hour already. You've given me so many fantastic quotes. I want to see if I can pick one out. Let me give me one out right there.
I need
there.
To watch because Klopp has ended Mike Dean, you know. I need to, because I've seen the quotes. I need to listen. I need to listen to him. Just end this fool.
Well, here's one. John Stones after the game. We feel a bit deflated in the dressing room. We came here to win, to which Anthony Boylan immediately responded with, we came here to cheat. Which is 115 times the correct thing to say. Madge Apple is wondering if any ref in this league is competent. They're not. Yep. And I mean, the boys on the Sunday night show, I'm sure, are going to get into it because, I mean, let's just do a quick straw poll around the room. Kev, I think I know your opinion, so I'll let you go last. Luke, is that a penalty at the end of the game?
Yes.
And Kev?
For the benefit of those who are listening to this on Spotify, 100%, 100%. And Madge, to answer your question, is there a referee in the Premier League who hasn't been corrupted by the PGM oil yet? Yeah, the guy who refereed Crystal Palace versus Luton. But Mike Dean decided to go in on him as well because he signed autographs for kids at halftime. Never mind that.
Yeah. Let's never mind all that. I'm a little
disappointed. Mike Dean just wants his colleagues to ignore kids. Yeah.
I want Mike Dean to get hit by a tram somewhere. I mean, that's just me. It's not a train. I said a tram. He'll survive. He'll be fine, but he'll have massive internal injuries. They're all an absolute gang of shit houses. I cannot wait for the monumental apology letter from the PGMOL. I honestly, Luke, don't know how to feel about this game because I felt that we had to win this game. And by the time the full-time whistle sounded and we finished with the draw, I was of 5-6 of the mind that a draw is not bad.
I think I said a few weeks ago, if we go into the international break, top or second, knowing that the international break's coming at a perfect time for us. Because I think we'll only probably be missing Jota, maybe Alisson, after the international break. Then it's going to be all systems go, really. And, yeah, the win would have been perfect because it would have had this in our hands. A draw is still great because I don't think Arsenal will beat City at the Etihad. But a loss would have been really bad. Not in terms of it wouldn't have ruled us out of winning the league, but momentum. City, Pep, and Pep getting that monkey off the back that they could win with a full crowd. But yeah, I've just been scrolling through like Twitter whilst we've been doing this just to get other people's reactions. Hey, Arsenal fans are all getting super hyped, you know, like super hyped, super giddy, which I know that would happen next 2 weeks. They're going to be talking. Then they're probably going to get humbled when they go to the Etihad. And then they're all going to be bursting into flames again. So, you know what? I think I'll take a draw.
We got to hope so. Kev, were you in the I'll bite your hand off for a draw brigade before the match?
No, I was firmly in the camp of don't lose. Win it if you can. Whatever you do,
well, don't that's six lose. 6-2-3s, isn't it, Kev?
Yeah, it's literally
a case for a draw and don't lose.
Yeah, it's you know, if you can win it, great. Ideally, whatever you do, get yourself in a position where you're not going to fucking lose it, because Klopp is right. The title is either way. The title wasn't going to be decided today.
Nope.
there's an awful lot of football to be played between now and the end of the season. And a lot of it is going to depend on how sides go in Europe. The more we go, the longer everyone goes in Europe, I think it benefits us because I think we've got the better squad. And muscle memory will kick in. Muscle memory will kick in from Man City from April on. You know, they know how to get it done. You know, we have players in our squad who know how to get it done. Arsenal are still, I think, the third youngest squad in the Premier League. And when things don't go their way or they lose a couple of key players, they revert to type. You know, at the end of the day, that's just how I see it. But we're well in this title race. And after that performance, after that second half performance, the confidence we can take from that, knowing that we've got key players coming back, yeah, we're going to be absolutely fine. I'm completely relaxed about it.
I love your positivity, Kev. It's what I needed. I mean, Luke, it didn't go the best in the Liverpool world today. It would have been much, obviously, better if we'd have gotten the 3 points and gone clear at the top of the Premier League. But as somebody with mixed podcasting aspirations, how's the fighting world going? I'm wondering, Luke, I don't pay a lot of attention to it. Now, maybe I'm being ignorant, but how does it work when an MMA fighter does a boxing match against a boxer? I mean, if you don't know, Luke, I'll let you plug your own show. But how did Ngannou do against Anthony Joshua?
Not so good. Not so good. He got viciously knocked out. Which is,
I believe,
shame.
The correct terminology is knocked the fuck out.
He got slept, basically. He got slept.
I have never seen anyone do that, even with 4 ounce gloves. Yeah,
He got folded in half. Yeah.
But here's the thing. It's two different disciplines, two completely different sports. And you could tell, as soon as Ngannou got hit the first time, his shape fell apart, his form fell apart, he was wide open. And the difference between Joshua and Fury, Joshua, that's what happens when a boxer takes it seriously. And that's what should have happened. But when McGregor fought,
Did you see Fury's face, Kev?
Yeah.
After Joshua knocked him out.
Yeah.
For sakes, really?
Yeah. Because it just highlights how embarrassing Tyson Fury was. You know, at the end of the day, if Fury had taken that fight anywhere near seriously, it would have ended the same way. Mayweather should have done exactly the same to McGregor. If he'd have took it anywhere near seriously and if it wasn't a pantomime show, then the same thing would happen. My only fear now, well, it's not a fear. It's a hope, really, that Mike Tyson takes it seriously against Jake Paul. If Mike Tyson takes it anywhere near remotely seriously against Jake Paul, we can end this nonsense about YouTubers and MMA fighters crossing sports. Just end this nonsense once and for all. It's horrific for boxing. It's a disgrace. Kev, it shouldn't be allowed to happen.
I'm half the fan that you are, and I'm presuming you're half the fan Luke is, but there is a 90% possibility that we are going to see in the Mike Tyson Jake Paul fight a recreation of Rocky IV, where the corner's throwing the towel and going, it's supposed to be an exhibition, as a guy lies dead. Throw the damn towel. I mean, Luke, give us a plug for your channel and tell me that you think that Mike Tyson has a chance to actually kill Jake Paul.
Hey, last time I saw Mike Tyson, he's walking with a stick. So make of that what you will. So
I don't know. Tony Jeffrey put out of Mike Tyson sparring. And
but that was taken a couple of years ago, though. That was when he was doing the Roy Jones fight. But my channel,
Muscle Memory, mate.
So I do MMA videos on that. I'll probably do a review for UFC 299 that me, Callum, and James did a watch along on Callum's channel, The Sanson Show, where we did the prelims. And Callum told me to wake up at the main event because I was dozing off at 6:20 this morning. So, yeah, but
that was a bit of an undercard, wasn't it?
Yeah, getting ready for UFC 300 because we're going to do the whole card for UFC 300. So yeah, exciting times,
Good.
Yeah, it's it's incredible endurance and stamina that you European fighting fans show for these when the undercard starts. And I'm looking at my watch and I'm like, it's 8 p.m. and it's the undercard starting and there's going to be 7 hours of undercard. I can't even imagine what hour it is when you guys are going to be actually watching the main event going on. But I really hope that Mike Tyson just, can he actually punch Jake Paul's head completely off of his body?
If he actually does, if he actually connects, the thing is, look, this is a show. And that's the annoying thing for me. Truly, this shouldn't be happening. Roy Jones is talking about getting back in the ring. You know what I mean? With James Toney. It shouldn't be allowed to happen. It's ridiculous.
I mean, we said the same thing about Roy when he kept the Palace job last summer. Like, come on, Roy. Yeah. You're too old.
Well, we'll head off in a second, but I saw an interesting thing the other day. When Klopp, I think at the minute, there's only 4 managers of the 92 Football League and Premier League clubs that are over the age of 60. It's only 4. Yeah. There's 14 managers under the age of 40. You know, so it's a young man's game.
Yeah, you shared that link with us in the Telegram.
Yeah,
group,
it was a great read.
I read that full article. I think it was from The Mirror or The Telegraph.
Yeah, it was The Mirror.
Yeah, it was The Mirror. And it was a very well-written article, which in this day and age is pretty hard to come by. But it goes back to the opinion that I held in the kind of immediate reaction to Jurgen Klopp announcing his leaving Liverpool of like, you got to live your life. You cannot, I wouldn't say it to somebody working at a factory or at a railroad or a teacher or anybody that you should give every moment of your working life up until you're pretty much in the grave to your job, because that's a bunch of bullshit. You got to actually live your own life and enjoy your own things. So I made my peace with Jurgen Klopp stepping away, and that article talking about the strains being put on managers and how it's just kind of a lost phenomenon, the pressure put on top level managers and how nobody thinks about the fact that they're being absolutely worked into the ground. But I mean, as long as it's Erik ten Hag at Manchester United, I'm a little bit okay with it. But yeah, I mean, boys, it's pretty much everything is all as you were. We've reached game week 28. The top 3 contenders for the league title have all played 28 games. Arsenal is on 64 points. Liverpool is on 64 points. They're ahead of us on goal difference. Man City's on 63 points. Luke, buckle up.
Hey, I've got champagne on ice.
I went out and bought 2 bottles today in the half hour before the game started, just in the off chance that Darwin Nunez scored a hat trick for my FPL team today, but it did not happen, and they can just stay on ice, and that's fine because we're Liverpool and we got shit to play for this season. But in terms of the Premier League, are you still confident, Luke?
Yeah, I think we'll win the league. I think the international break's coming at a perfect time. Perfect time. Get injured players back. It's perfect.
Yeah, no kidding. Kev, how about you? You still confident of Liverpool being able to come out on top of the Premier League?
We're winning the fucking lot, mate.
Yeah, that's it. I'm into the parade.
We've the best squad. We've players coming back. They're hungry. They're young. They're fearless. We're winning the lot. Banking it.
Yeah. It's I read a thing, I don't know if it was on the BBC or the Guardian, and it was talking about Arsenal and rotating players to give people a break, and it said you don't give 20-year-olds a chance in a Premier League title push just to get experience. And I thought, we put a bunch of kids out in a League Cup final. Like, it's not for experience, because Liverpool takes all of this shit extremely seriously. So I'm very happy to have done this show tonight, because coming into this before the match, I was win or it's all fucking over. And after the draw, I'm very happy to have had both Luke and Kev here with me tonight to kind of bring me back that it is not all lost. It's not in our hands. the next Premier League.
I'm going to start charging for these therapy sessions one day.
No, you're not. You're not, Kev. You're not allowed to start charging for this. You're not. It's that's not allowed.
But they are therapy sessions, man.
It is. It is therapy sessions. Right. I would like to give a happy 1 year anniversary just about to the day of my fucking cat trying to kill me to death on YouTube, because that was around about this time last year when we are coming off of the back of beating Man United 7-0 at home and then losing 2-5 at home to Real Madrid. It was not great, but onwards and upwards. It's not in our hands anymore, but we go again because this is Liverpool and this is what we do. So thank you, Luke, for joining us.
Good to be back.
Luke, give us the shout out for your channel once again in case anybody wants to get some of the best MMA coverage going.
Yeah, just check out my channel, Luke Tanner. I think I'm on 159 subscribers, so
get the fuck in.
Come
there.
On, guys.
Let's
over
knock that up. Yeah, there's 164 of us in here. Let's tick that over well past the 200 right there in the build up to the absolutely massive UFC number XXX. That's 300. Kev, you got anything else before we get out of here?
Yeah, just make sure you guys are back for 10 o'clock. Don't forget the charity links are in the description. If you can share, please, you know, share it. Costs absolutely nothing. But if you can donate, please do. Got the golf day coming up as well. Gav will have all the details from 10 o'clock. So tune back in then.
That is absolutely correct. We are 1 hour and 40 minutes away from the Sunday night show of Gav and the lads coming on with a little bit more time to digest this all and come firing out of a cannon. One of the four of Gav, Kev, our Gav, Keith, Shawnee, and Emmett will have a hot take. You can almost guarantee it. So we'll see you guys all back here for that. Thank you very much for joining us, Lucas. Good seeing you, man. Thanks again, Kev. We'll see you at the next post-match show. Adios, everybody.
Sports Social Podcast Network.